Mets Musings is presented by FanDuel. FanDuel is the leader in one-day fantasy sports for money with immediate cash payouts, no commitments, and leagues from $1. Sign up at FanDuel.com and use the promo code METSMUSINGS. And by BaseballTalkRadio.com. BaseballTalkRadio.com is the home of over 30 of the finest baseball podcasts, with podcasts covering the U.S., Canada, and even a podcast on Japanese baseball. Fantasy leagues, we got you covered. Even a groundskeeper, we got it right here. If it's baseball, we'll be talking about it at BaseballTalkRadio.com, the home of great baseball talk shows.
Now it's time for some New York Mets baseball talk. Here's Gary Mack bringing you the latest news and analysis from Mets Nation and the world of baseball on another edition of Mets Musings.
And hello and welcome to another edition of Mets Musings. It's number 249. And welcome back. I'm Gary Mack, your host. Let's get right into it. The breaking news today is that David Wright will undergo surgery today in California for the herniated disc in his neck. The Mets announced this afternoon with a timetable for his return depending upon the success of the surgery and his recovery. In a statement, the team said the decision for Wright to have surgery was made after weeks of tests, rest, and anti-inflammatory injections, which failed to alleviate pain and improve his mobility. After trying every way to get back on the field, I've come to realize that it's best for me, my teammates, and the organization to proceed with surgery at this time, Wright said. My neck simply did not respond to any of the treatments of the past few weeks. While incredibly frustrating and disappointing, I am determined to make a full recovery and get back on the field as soon as I can to help the Mets win. I greatly appreciate the support of my teammates and our fans throughout the last few weeks. The Mets have an insurance policy on Wright, which allows them to begin recouping 75% of his salary once he misses 60 games. It will kick in late July, potentially resulting in $5 million in savings, reports Mike Puma of the New York Post. Mets GM Sandy Alderson said earlier this week that the possible surgery requires 3 to 5 months of recovery and intimated it would end Wright's season and is a distinct possibility could end Wright's career. This is a very serious situation, and how he is going to be able to sustain what he has to do to keep the spinal stenosis at bay and add this herniated disc and the surgery and the recovery time into that, it's going to be a lot for him. And I'm sure that he will try to make it back by the end of the year. If not, he'll try to make it back definitely by next season and try to make it back, period. Make a go of it. But it is going to be very difficult, I think. And he may perhaps have to start thinking about retiring from the game. There is a lot more life to be had after the game, and you want to be able to enjoy it somewhat. And he's going to be in pain anyway. He's going to have the spinal stenosis, but why complicate it with this other problem? And so we'll see. Maybe the surgery will be 100%. He'll come back and only have to worry about the spinal stenosis and be able to maintain that. But it's such a grind now, by his own admission, to get ready for a ball game, to get ready with another injury like this at this point in his career. But I hope that he does get well, and I really hope he can come back. He is the captain. He's very inspiring, a great guy, good for the franchise. And look, if he's played his last game, I'm almost positive they'll keep him around in some capacity. He'll be in the organization, perhaps maybe a minor league manager if he wishes, or a coach, something along that line, roving instructor. There's all kinds of things that they come up with that they could do So it would be really nice to see him back on the field, especially. But if not some part of him having a part in the organization. And let's talk about the rest of the Mets. Their week, they split the four-game series with the Brewers. They lost Saturday and Sunday. They were off Monday and almost got no hit on Tuesday by a rookie pitcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And it was just pitiful, a pitiful display of no hitting. And then who knows, how crazy is this game? The next night, they go on a tear and erupted for 11 runs and a season-high 19 hits in an 11-2 win against the Pirates at Citi Field. And Noah Syndergaard led up two runs, only one of which was earned. Five hits, and he struck out 11, was masterful. He retired 17 straight Pirates after allowing John Jaso to start the game with a leadoff single. He was just in control the whole game. Tried to go for the complete game, but just threw too many pitchers, and Terry took him out after 8 1/3 innings. Wilmer Flores led the offensive charge Wednesday, going 2-for-5 with 4 RBIs, including a 2-run home run. Kelly Johnson was 3-for-5 with 2 RBI, and in place of Michael Conforto, who was out of the lineup with a sore wrist. Matt Reynolds also went 3-for-5 with 2 RBI, replacing Walker, Neil Walker, that is, who missed his third straight game with lower back pain. And this kid, Matt Reynolds, has been hitting in small doses. He came into a pinch hit the other night and got a big hit and scored a go-ahead run. And he's been doing that quite a bit, coming off the bench and getting some nice hits for the Mets. So good to see. Maybe this kid can be something up here. We'll have to see how he progresses. And especially with Wright being out now, he could win a spot as the utility guy, the super utility guy. He can play second. He can play short. He could probably play a little bit of third, maybe even a little touch at first if he had to, but I don't think that's going to be an issue. So Matt Reynolds warming up the bat a little bit, and maybe he's got to get some more playing time somehow. And Mets manager Terry Collins was taken to the hospital on Sunday after feeling ill before Sunday's game. However, he told Bergen Record reporter Matt Ehalt by text that he's doing fine. He was cleared to head back on Monday, was back in the dugout on Tuesday. He said it could have been possibly some dehydration of some sort, but he felt great, and all the tests came back okay. So good for that. Good that Terry Collins is A-okay and back on the bench. And Mets catcher Travis d'Arnaud caught 9 innings, went 2-for-3 with a double and an RBI during a rehab game Wednesday for Single A St. Lucie. d'Arnaud is expected to move his rehab assignment to Las Vegas shortly. And Sandy Olson said that he is expected to rejoin the big club next Tuesday. So I guess d'Arnaud will move to Vegas over the weekend, play a couple of games over the weekend at AAA, and then show up at the big club at Citi Field and be ready to go next Tuesday, according to Sandy Alderson. And let's see, Logan Verrett was demoted to AAA Las Vegas after struggling during Saturday's spot start. He was replaced by reliever Eric Goodell. I think it was just to have a fresh arm because they were using the bullpens quite a bit. So I expect to see Logan Verrett. He pitched too well to not be brought back up. So we'll probably see him shortly. All right, let's take a quick break, and I'll be back with my guest right after this.
Hey, baseball fans and book fans as well. This is Frank Nappy, author of the Legend of Mickey Tussler series, inviting all of you to learn more about my protagonist, Mickey Tussler, an incredible pitching prodigy who has autism. Follow Mickey's journey as he captures the hearts of fans everywhere with his blazing fastball and indomitable spirit. Please visit Amazon or www.franknappy.com for more information.
Hi, this is the world-famous Mr. Brewtown of BrewtownSports.Podomatic.com. You know, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, Brewtown Sports. You can also listen to the show at Stitcher.com, TuneIn.com, and iTunes.com. And we've got the new one. It's called BrewtownRadio.Webley.com. But the one that I'm most proud of being on is BaseballPodcast.net. It is the home of great baseball talk shows. Check it out, my show and all kinds of other programs all about Major League Baseball. So check it out. That's baseballpodcast.net, the home for great baseball talk shows.
The Phillies and Mets rivalry has never been better. Hi, my name is Rich Baxter, and I host Phillies Talk Podcast. I hope you'll join me, along with my co-host, James Jim Mulry, as we talk all about the Phillies all season long. That's Phillies Talk Podcast at FightinPhillies.com. And now back to Gary Mack and this great edition of Mets Musings.
And I'm back, and I'm joined this evening by Kurt Gill. He is a co-host of the very popular podcast called Atlanta Baseball Talk, and we've had his other co-host on in the past. And Kurt, welcome to Mets Musings.
Well, thanks for having me, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here.
And, of course, the Braves are coming into town to face the Mets this weekend. And, Kurt, I'm trying to be nice, but it's not easy without having to touch on the Braves are pretty bad this year.
Yeah, try dedicating a 45-minute long podcast to talking about the Braves. We deserve some sort of medal, I think, for having to endure this. Yeah, they're the worst team in baseball, I would offer. We just split with the Reds, who are also really, really terrible. So we're coming in on a hot streak. We've won two games in a row, so watch out, Mets.
Oh, okay.
yeah, they're bad. I mean, it's a combination of sort of spotty starting pitching with a bad bullpen and no offense, which usually does not prescribe that's not a winning formula.
Well, let's talk about that. The spotty starting pitching. It's unfortunately, or fortunately for me, you're going to get the three of the better pitchers that we have. Let's put it to you that way in a row. It's going to be Matt Harvey pitching tomorrow evening against a young man named Gant,
and who was a Mets farmhand.
Oh, he's one of the guys that came over.
Yeah, we got him last year through the Kelly Johnson Juan Uribe trade.
Okay. And Blair will be pitching against Mats on Saturday. And Sunday could be an interesting matchup. Jacob deGrom against Julio Teheran. That could be a good pitching matchup. Both guys are kind of struggling, but their ERAs are respectable. So,
Teheran's actually pitched really, really well. They just don't. He's the Shelby Miller of the 2016 Braves. Last year, Shelby Miller pitched great for the Braves. They never scored any runs for him. I mean, it was almost embarrassing. The poor guy. Won zero runs every single time he went out there to pitch. And Teheran has had the same bad luck this year. I mean, you know, they're not scoring a lot of runs for anybody, but he in particular, I don't think they've scored more than three runs in a good number of his starts. So it's tough. And he'll only give up two or three runs. He's bad about giving up home runs. The last two games he's lost, the last game he lost to the Reds, he gave up a three-run homer to Jay Bruce in the first inning. Those are the only runs he gave up the whole game, and the Braves lost 3-1. So that's kind of the way he is. He's a really good pitcher, though. Aaron Blair is a guy that we got from the Diamondbacks in the Shelby Miller trade. He was a very highly thought of pitching prospect. I think he was rated the Braves number two pitching prospects, and he has come up and has shown some signs, but he is really overall struggled a lot. He struggles also with giving up homers, and it's a lot of location issues with him. So that's kind of what you're going to get with those guys. And Gant, he's kind of a spot starter. They've had some guys that have been hurt, so they're kind of pulling guys up to spot start. He's got a weird, the thing about Gant, which you'll see when he starts, he's got the strangest wind up. It's almost like he starts and then he stops and then he starts again. And we still, even as Braves fans, we don't understand how it's not a balk every single time he throws. And I guess it's just because he follows the same pattern every single time. Under baseball rules, I suppose that's how he gets away with it. But it is bizarre.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was John Gant. And because I know what you're talking about. I saw him play actually at Single A Ball a couple of years ago when he was with the Cyclones. And I didn't realize it was the same guy. But
yeah.
He was pretty good then, and he's got some talent, but we'll have to see if he can hone it. You know, you get to this level, and sometimes it's hard, but you've got a lot of young guys on your team, a lot of young pitchers. Another Met that's over there, a former Met, I should say, is Dario Alvarez. Has he been in many games? Is he still on the roster as is? I think he pitched
last night. Actually, I'm trying to remember. There's so many guys shuttling in and out; it's almost hard to keep track of. But I feel like he pitched last night and pitched really well. I could be totally wrong about that. Mm-hmm. Because it's kind of tough, especially when they're playing the Reds on a Wednesday night and the game goes to 13 innings. It's tough, even as a guy who's doing a Braves podcast, to follow that game all the way through. But I think he pitched last night and pitched really well. So if that's the guy I'm thinking of. So, yeah, he is still with the Braves. The Braves need all the bullpen help they can get, and so they usually keep a guy on there until he just really can't be kept out there anymore, and then they just shuttle him back and forth between Gwinnett, which is the AAA team right up the road here from Atlanta, and they just move guys back and forth.
You know, it's beginning to look like New York Mets South down there. I mean, Alvarez.
we've already talked about who we're going to trade you guys Kelly Johnson for next year.
Now, if you just got Uribe back.
Yeah. Where is he? Is he still on the Mets? I don't even know where
he is. No, he's with Uribe. Cleveland now. Oh, and I think he's a little bit out of action. He had a little let's just say he wasn't wearing a cup and took a ground ball in a particular area. So he went down for the count, and I don't know if he's back or not. But
it's not some sort of sandwich-related issue or something like that.
No.
He's not. He never looked like he was in the best shape of a professional.
Well, he was no panda, though, you know?
Yeah, right.
He looked like Mr. America compared to the panda.
Yeah, right. Well, amazingly, the Braves didn't sign Panda and they're still having to pay that contract. He's like one of the guys that they haven't had to eat a massively bad contract with. The Braves almost have as much dead money right now as they do live money. They're on field payroll because they just traded Jason Grilly to the Blue Jays and basically paid the Blue Jays to take him off their hands. So the Braves on field payroll right now is hovering around $50 million, which for a Major League Baseball team is really astounding, considering that David Price is making $25 million or whatever as a one player. We had an on field payroll, and our dead money is pushing like $40 million because we're still paying Nick Swisher, and we're still playing Michael Bourne. You know, we finally got rid of Ugla's contract, but yeah, there's a lot of dead weight that we're still holding on to.
Well, another contract you're holding on to that not dead weight, of course, but I'm talking about, of course, whose name just escaped me. Oh, Freddie Freeman, your first baseman. Lots of rumors about him being moved by the deadline. It probably would be a good move at this point in time. They're in a full-blown rebuilding process, but with the new stadium next year, any idea what they may do with him?
You know, Coppola, who's the GM down here, has sworn that Freddie Freeman will never be traded, which how much weight you hold in that, I don't know. They've made some unpopular moves, shall we say. Andrelton Simmons probably being at the top of the list. just because he's such a dynamic player, never much of a bat, but just to be able to watch, you know, the modern day Ozzie Smith,
is
just, it's fun. It's fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Freeman, you know, Freeman's got obviously a huge contract. He has not played well. He was hurt a lot last year. He has not been very good this year. Just had a big series against the Reds, but their pitching is pretty awful. So, but he's sort of struggled this year. I mean, he is one guy that he's really the only power source we have. He has 12 of our 27 home runs. So, it would be incredibly unpopular to move him. You would also, I think, be selling very low on a guy I still think is very talented and, you know, probably a top 5-6 first baseman in the National League. But I don't know. I mean, the big names, obviously, that the big question marks are with Tehran, who we talked about before, and with Freddie, because those are the two biggest names and the two most probably highly sought after Braves right now. And we don't know if they move either one of them. You mentioned the new park, so the thinking is that they have to have actually a major league caliber, something resembling a major league caliber team going into the new ballpark. And they claim they will. They claim that they're going to have a lot of money to spend in the offseason to put into the team. They're hoping a lot of these young guys come up and start contributing. So I think that I personally think it's unlikely that they will move Freeman.
And what about Markakis? He's another chip, if you will, that could be moved back to the American League. I'm sure Baltimore might be interested in getting him back for their run at the pennant. Any thoughts on Markakis moving?
I think if it got an offer that was halfway decent and a team was willing to take most of his contract off the Braves' hands, the Braves would move him in an instant. Unfortunately, he's another guy that has really not produced this year. It was a guy that was a great Oriole. He's a local guy here from Georgia. They signed him to a contract which everyone down here was kind of curious about because they were going to start going through this rebuild, and then they signed him for a contract for an older guy that seemed long and maybe seemed a little expensive. And he's been a solid player, but he's lost all his power. He had neck surgery the summer or the offseason before he came to Atlanta. So they kept saying, oh, well, once he gets healthy from the neck surgery, he'll get back to where he's hitting 12. I mean, it wasn't like he hit 30 home runs, but he hit 12, 14 home runs. Right. He's never come close to that. In fact, I think he went a couple of seasons where he didn't hit one home run. So, again, it's a guy that, yeah, I'm sure they would love to move, but you're going to get pennies on the dollar for him. He started out great this season and has totally fallen off a cliff. He's batting 243 right now. So he's just not been the same player. But I think he's a great clubhouse guy. He's still a pretty good defensive player. So, yeah, I'm sure there would be teams that would like to take Nick Markakis. I just don't know that they're going to take – it's $20-something million with this rest of this year – well, we're prorated for the rest of this year, and he's still owed money for next year. So I don't know that a team is going to be willing to take all of that money or a bulk of that money, which I think Atlanta would want to move him to do. But, yeah, I think they would absolutely move Nick Markakis if they had the opportunity.
So it seems like they're still having tied up with a lot of these long-term contracts that aren't necessarily panning out. I mean, Freeman's still pretty young. He could – as you said, he had the wrist injury last year and some other injuries and could come back from that. Markakis is a little bit older. Any young guys that have been surprising anybody or come up out of anywhere? I mean, the catching is pretty old, really, you know, if you think about it. Your catching staff, any younger catchers there? Flowers is what, 30, and Pazinski is
60,
112 or something.
Yeah. And he, you know, and of course he came back to reality this year. He had a great season last year. They re-signed him, which is, you know, the thing you do. He's a great veteran presence for a lot of these young pitchers, but he's been awful this year. And for a while, when Freddy Gonzalez was still the manager, they kept throwing him out there. And we could never understand why, because Flowers, not that Flowers has been great, but at the time Flowers was infinitely better than Pierzynski. And Pierzynski actually, like within the first four games, you know, the Braves started out the season 0-9 or something, and within the first four games, he directly contributed to Braves' losses by errors. He just didn't make a catch where he could have tagged somebody out at home. Mm-hmm. And so we couldn't understand what he had to do to get benched. Yeah, the catching situation is kind of a joke, and frankly, it is throughout their system. They don't really have a catcher that's anywhere. I think they're looking at a guy in the international draft that's coming up, mm-hmm. one of the big catching prospects internationally. Young guys that have come out of nowhere. Malik Smith has sort of been an interesting player. He's one of their really highly rated guys that's actually been about playing with the Braves. He's an outfielder. He's playing left because NC Arte is playing center. Chase Darno, the brother of you guys,
right, Darno Travis,
player, yeah. has been a godsend, really. A guy that didn't even make the team out of spring training and is now leading the team in batting and had the game-winning hit last night. Has really been a fun player and a versatile player. He's played multiple infield positions and played left field for them. So he's been a fun guy. And you know, with the Braves the way they are, it's almost like you just want them to ride a hot hand. And so he's getting a lot of playing time just sort of moving around because they don't really have – there's quite a few positions for the Braves that aren't really set. I mean, you've got Freeman at first. You've got Markakis in right. You've got NC Arte in center. But Malik Smith is left-handed, and his splits aren't very good. So Darno is a righty, so he's getting some splits with Malik Smith. The third baseman situation is not great. We've got Adonis Garcia, who's an older guy, who is not a very good defensive third baseman. So he plays some third there. Yeah, it's just – I mean, I guess the most interesting young players are pitchers. Yeah, it's just – it's a weird mix. It's kind of – you know, it's the situation. The Braves are actually one of the oldest teams. At least they were. They've kind of shipped some of these guys off. But going into the season, the Braves are one of the oldest teams in Major League Baseball because it was a bunch of these guys on the last legs, like Frank Coor and Gordon mm-hmm. Beckham and guys like that that they brought in. Of course, Brzezinski pushes that. Greeley, Jim Johnson. I mean, it's a lot of old guys on this team that really pushed the meter toward, you know, you and I's age frame more than you would expect towards a team that is built so much on their farm system right now.
Yeah, it seems from what you're saying that I thought they were in a better position than they are with the clearing out some of the guys, but it seems like they're not really in that good of a position, and their farm system doesn't seem to be producing as many guys as you would think.
Yeah, and a lot of the guys, you know, they just got rated by one of the systems, I don't even know, might have been Keith Law at ESPN or somebody like that. They just got rated the best farm system in baseball. But a lot of those guys are down low. They are single A, double A guys. Dansby Swanson, who is the big shortstop prospect, you know, he's at double A. They just moved him up from single A where he was killing it, and he's moved up to double A and is sort of struggling. Ozzy Albies is another big infield prospect that they have, but he's very young. He's only 19, and he was killing it at AA. They moved him up at AAA. Of course, he's now struggling at AAA. So we don't know. As far as us as fans, it's weird because this season is a loss. And so there's part of us that you don't want – we don't want these guys to be brought up and really start their clocks, you know, their arbitration clocks,
right.
because it's a waste. I mean, it's a waste to have that, other than to get some experience. So you might see some of these guys come up in September, unless they dump a bunch of guys or are able to move a bunch of guys at the trading deadline and have a bunch of spaces open. But I would imagine that a bunch of these guys, but a lot of their prospects, and we just saw it again with the draft, the Braves way, as they call it, is pitchers, 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 wave after wave of pitchers. So there's not a lot of position player prospects in their system. And if they are, they're not really all that impressive, I guess. and they're way down low. So it's not a function of them being able to contribute next year. You're talking 2018, 2019 on when they will finally get up to this level.
And speaking of the draft, how did they make out in the past draft from about a week or so ago?
Well, there's a lot of it's kind of a weird thing. The Braves, the I don't know if you know much about the Braves ownership, but they're owned by a corporate entity, kind of a faceless corporate entity. It's Liberty Media. They're based out of Colorado. And really, ever since they took on the ownership of the team, it's really been kind of a slash and burn type of deal. The payroll has been cut dramatically. There's been a lot of rumors. We've talked to a lot of people. I'm sure you do, too, about the drafts and things like that. They drafted Mike Minor. They could have drafted Mike Trout. You know, they drafted Mike Minor because he could come cheap, because he was close to being major league ready. And so the concern is that this ownership group, they're more interested in the bottom line, which this new stadium is just a big revenue stream coming into them, which that's a totally different story. But so Ian Anderson is a guy out of New York who was their first pick. He's a guy from New York, and he was a guy that wasn't really maybe they picked third, which is the highest the Braves have picked in a long time. Maybe not projected to be that high, 12th, 15th, somewhere in that neighborhood. But what they did was, you know, of course, you have this money that you're allotted to spend. And right. So what they did is their approach was that they were going to maybe reach. That's might be a strong word, because some people like this guy and said it was not that much of a reach. J.J. Cooper at Baseball America thought they had a great draft. So they took him, and then they took a couple of guys. They had four of the top 80 picks. They took two guys who were really highly rated pitchers at 40 and 43, whenever the second and third picks were, who had dropped because their expectation was that their signing bonus they wanted was going to be a lot higher. So they've already signed those two guys. Wentz and Mueller, I think, are their names. And so it's really the top three guys are really, I think they're highly thought of. It's just that it's more really, really, really young pitching. It's three high school pitchers. But, you know, they were considered two of maybe the best five left-handed pitching prospects. I saw somewhere that said that, you know, Ian Anderson and these other two guys is three of the top eight pitching prospects overall. So, you know, but I think with us, with Steve and Hamilton and myself, three hosts of Atlanta Baseball Talk, we just kind of wanted something different. You know, it's the same. We got a lot of pitchers in our system. We got a lot of young pitchers in our system. We wanted a splashy college bat, you know, something that would kind of move the meter. And of course, they didn't do that.
Well, you know, it's pitching is a good thing to have, though, because you can always move that for something down the line if they perform. And I mean, look, that's what the Mets did last year. You got John Gant and whoever else for Kelly Johnson and Uribe. They moved Michael Fulmer to get Cespedes. So it can come in handy, but I know how it's tough when it's a losing season and it just drags on forever. And believe me, you're going to see a lot of things that go wrong and keep going wrong. But, you know, hopefully they'll turn it around within the next few years. And as always with a draft, you never know.
Sure. Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's also their stated objective, is that they will stockpile so much young pitching and then be able to move this pitching. But I guess the issue that I have with that is a few years ago, the Braves went back when they were good. They were in a, you know, they were in a pennant race, and they went and they needed some outfield help. And so they went and made a trade with the Cardinals and picked up J.D. Drew for half a season. And so they traded away a young pitcher in that trade, and his name was Adam Wainwright. And so, you know, you ended up getting a half a season of J.D. Drew, which he was okay. He wasn't great. The Braves, I don't even think, made it to the World Series that year. He didn't re-sign with the team. And then you've given away a Cy Young pitcher to the Cardinals and Adam Wainwright. So my fear is that, you know, I know that I forget where I was watching or reading about that. I think it was the Blue Jays that approached the Mets about a young pitcher named Jacob deGrom a few years ago, who was way down in single A or something like that. And wisely, the Mets didn't move him. But, you know, it's one of those things where you fear that you hold on to a guy and he ends up being Jair Jurgens, and the guy you move becomes Adam Wainwright, you know?
Well, you know, we had a similar incident. We went to the Blue Jays. They came to us for DeGrom. We went to them and wanted some young guy named Syndergaard.
Ah, how did that work out?
And it's not bad. Not too bad so far, you know?
Yeah. Well, thankfully we miss him when we get up there.
Yeah, you will. You'll miss Thor. But you'll miss all the activity around it, though, you know?
It's, well, we just had to play the Cubs, and we got Hamill, Arrieta, and Lester in a three-game series.
So it's not going to get any easier, though, because you're going to get Harvey, who's been pitching better as of late, and Mats, and of course DeGrom. So
now we do get Syndergaard. I'm looking at it right here because we. Sorry, that's the next series.
Yeah. I think he's pitching Tuesday next time.
Well, and after we leave New York, we go to Miami and get Fernandez in the first game down there.
So it's a little bit of a rough stretch for the Braves.
Well,
but
and this has been the whole thing. I mean, you know, they started out. Obviously, they were atrocious, but the schedule they had starting the season was just brutal. I mean, it was the Nationals, and it was, you know, whoever every weekend. I mean, it was the Cardinals, and it was the Dodgers, and it was the Mets, and it was the Red Sox, and it was the Cubs. I mean, every single series was against a contender. So of course he got fired, and then the idea was that, well, Snitker will come in, Brian Snitker, who's the new manager. Mm-hmm. Who was the longtime third base coach and then was the AAA coach. So they just brought him in. He's just another kind of guy that's been in the system forever that the Braves love. You know, I mean, Bobby Cox is still kicking it around down there. So, and then the idea would be, okay, well, the schedule is going to ease up and the Braves will show some life here. Well, they haven't really showed any life. They got swept by the Diamondbacks. They got swept by the Brewers. So they're just bad. I mean, it really doesn't matter who they're playing. They're just a bad baseball team.
And I was surprised that Freddie Garcia got fired when he did, and especially the way he found out about it was not the best.
Yeah.
Because I thought I remember reading that he was a favorite of, was it Schertz or?
Well, Bobby Cox specifically. I mean, Bobby Cox loves him. Mm-hmm. He was his third base coach before he was the Marlins coach, and then he was the handpicked successor when Bobby retired. And yeah, I mean, Schertz is still here. They're both very involved in the system here because John Hart is here, and he's really good friends with Schertz. And John Coppolello was the assistant GM, has been assistant GM for a long time. Was under Frank Wren, too, who also was fired as the GM, and basically because he signed Melvin Upton. But it's a very tight-knit thing, and you can't – I'm one of the few, I guess, people down here that – not that you don't appreciate what they did to build the team in the 90s, because there's no way that you can't appreciate that enough. The Braves are horrible in the 80s. The Braves are horrible in the 70s. And to make them the best team in baseball for 12 years, you know, whatever, maybe 8 of the 12 years out of that decade and plus is one for the ages. But I think there's also a time for them to kind of move on and to allow the Braves to develop a different persona, maybe, and just see, you know, how it would work out. And they just, like this year, they got rid of Wren because he had run a bunch of their buddies off. So this year they brought back all these old scouts that they had, all these old people that were used to be involved in the franchise that Frank Wren had run off. And so now it's back to, you know, the old boys club again. So we'll see what happens if they can apply their magic again.
Yeah, maybe they can. Who knows? We spoke a little bit about the new stadium. What's the reaction in Atlanta for the new stadium, and is it really that necessary? I mean, it seems like the Atlanta stadium now, the current one, is not that old.
It's not old. Turner Field was built. It was the Olympic stadium. So, of course, the Olympics were here in 1996. So you can age it. It's 20 years old.
20 years.
And I don't know if you've been down here. It's a great park. Atlanta's got traffic issues and even more so they've got, mass transit issues. That's the bigger problem down here. And so the MARTA is the mass transit system, mm-hmm, down here. And they didn't build a train stop out at the Olympic Stadium, which is the biggest mistake they made. And so Liberty, they kind of went back and forth. But yeah, I think the I'm answering everything with a long answer. But
that's okay.
It depends on who you talk to. The three guys that host our podcast, we're all city guys. You know, one guy lives in Boston now, but I mean, he grew up in Atlanta. We live Midtown Atlanta. So I live 15 minutes from Turner Field. The new stadium is going out in Cobb County, which is a suburban area. MARTA, the mass transit from Atlanta, doesn't even go out to Cobb County. And it's going to be built at the juncture of two of the busiest highways in Atlanta, and Atlanta has horrible traffic to begin with. So there's a lot of concerns about the traffic. There's a lot of concerns about lots of those types of issues. And I just think, and I know obviously that Shea's not downtown, but you know, New York is so massive that it's the city just goes everywhere. Well, it's going to be intermixed between some old office buildings and a shopping mall.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you think about iconic stadiums, you know, whatever, or showcase stadiums, whether it be the Pirates Stadium and the River, the Giants and the, you know, the Bay and all these beautiful stadiums and stuff. Well, I mean, and I don't know, maybe that.
Well, it looks like a terrific stadium on paper, and the pictures that I've seen and the webcams that they play.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a beautiful place, and they're also doing this massive complex that's going up as part of it. They're going to have lots of restaurants that are being headed by a lot of the big chefs here in Atlanta. Atlanta's a big food city these days. They're going to have, like, there's going to be a venue for bands and things like that. So they're really trying to create this 365-day-a-year center. And what their hope is, because none of that exists at Turner Field. So their hope is that, you know, people will avoid the traffic because they'll go out there at 3 o'clock. They'll go and hang out at these restaurants, eat dinner, go to the park. They can then go back to whatever the bars and all that kind of stuff, and create more of a situation like you have, you know, around Wrigley Field or something like mm-hmm. that. Just kind of that type of environment, which, you know, on paper that all looks great. And I'm sure once you get to the park, we've actually had the opportunity to go out there a couple of times. It really is. It's going to be a great looking place. It's going to have some neat things that are going to be unique to it. You know, nothing like a foul pole in the middle or a flagpole in the middle of center field or anything like that. But, you know, just some cool walls and things like that. And I mean, you know, on paper it looks great. When you see it, it might be hokey. But yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a beautiful place, and it's going to be done as top notch as they can possibly do it. It's just that I live 15 minutes from Turner Field, and it's going to take me an hour and a half to get to SunTrust Park.
They're going to have to do something about the mass transit situation, getting out there.
Indeed.
You know, I mean, that's your lifeline. I mean, you know, that's the beauty about Citi Field. There's a train stop that stops right there, and always has been, because they just built in the parking lot with Shea Stadium. So,
yeah.
Yeah, they're going to have to. That's a big thing nowadays. And, you know, people do like to drive. I enjoy driving into the games myself. I don't take the subway or train anymore. But it is an added necessity when you get a big crowd. You really need that option.
Well, in Atlanta, a lot of Atlanta fans are regional fans. You know, they're not I mean, obviously they have a big base in Atlanta. And one of the reasons that they moved out to this area, they – was because there's a high concentration of Braves fans out in Cobb County. It's not a small area. I mean, there's probably more people that live in Cobb County than live in Connecticut. So,
right.
and it's a, you know, it's just a big suburban area, just like most big cities have. But also Atlanta, they draw regionally. So there's people that will come in from Tennessee and North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, Florida, all these places, and they'll make a weekend of it. You know, they'll mm-hmm. come in and they'll go and go see all three games over the course of a weekend. So my concern for them is if they're flying in, it's really going to be a bear for them to get from the airport, which is way on the south side of town, to up there, because you don't have an interconnecting mass transit system. Cobb County has its own transit system. So you're going to have to figure out where, or you're going to have to take an Uber or a cab, and it's going to cost you $100 to get out there. So, yeah. And I, you know, they're kind of been going back and forth. But Cobb County is a very conservative area. So it became a big political thing. You know, I mean, it kind of became like everything else. It was the Democrats in Atlanta versus the Republicans in Cobb County, which really had no bearing on anything. But, you know, everything has to be political these days. So which is unfortunate, because, you know, why can't we all get along?
Just get along. Like we are.
Yeah, I mean, I want to go to the games. I want easy access to get to the games. I want to give you my money. Why don't you want to take it?
Yeah. Make it easy for me. Why make it more difficult?
Come on.
I never understood that, but that's the trend, and the trend in stadiums now seems to be with these whole communities building up around it. And maybe that's the plan. They're going to build hotels around it, you know, apartment complexes, and hope to draw from that.
Yeah, maybe so. And I mean, that's, you know, and that's great. That's one of the fun things about Atlanta, is going to a Braves game is you'll meet all sorts of people that are from all over the place. And then, I mean, and that's, you know, then that goes back obviously to the Superstation days when they were on TV all the time. And it's because also there still is not really many other Southern teams, you know. I mean, Baltimore and Washington by car are 10-12 hours away from Atlanta. Tampa, I guess, is probably the next closest city that has a Major League Baseball team. And who roots for Tampa? I mean, they're
there's 5 or 10
away.
People there.
Yeah. And then the other team would be the Marlins. And I mean, that's, you know, that's 12-14 hours away. And that's not even.
And that's a whole different life.
Yeah. And that's not even the South.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, that's its own kind of island down there.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, I hope at least that they do get somewhere, they figure it out, get on the right track. As long as it's after this weekend, then they can go on an 11-game winning streak or whatever until they play the Mets again.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the Braves, you know, it's funny because as part of our show, we always predict like what their record's going to be the week coming up. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, they'll steal a game. You know, they'll lose 3 in a row to the Brewers, and then they'll go and beat Kansas City or something like that, you know. And it's just they'll pull a game out that you just totally don't expect them to do. They split a series with the Giants recently. It's just weird. So, I mean, I can or beat a game from the Cubs. You know, I mean, I can totally see them losing all 3 of these games, and then I can see something crazy happen, like, you know, Gant beating Harvey or something like that. You just never know with the Braves.
Yeah, and you never know in baseball either.
Yeah.
Well, Kurt, I want to thank you so much for coming on this evening, and please say hello to Steve for me. And we'll have to do it again.
Absolutely. Thanks, Gary. That was great. It was great talking to you, and I will pass on your sentiments to Steve.
Okay, and we'll be back right after this. 516-619-6341. That is the comment voicemail hotline if you'd like to be a part of the show. And drop us a line, leave us a comment or a voicemail, question, anything at all. Call that number, 516-619-6341. Or go to MetsMusings.com and click on that widget in the middle of the screen, and that's a speak pipe, and you can leave a voicemail right through your computer through your computer's microphone. Or if you prefer to do things the old-fashioned way, send us an email at MetsMusings@gmail.com. The Facebook page is facebook.com/groups/MetsMusings, and the Twitter handle is @MetsMusings1. And if you'd like to help out the show, check out our Patreon page. Check out the campaign at patreon.com/MetsMusings. And we're back with the minor league recap. Rafael Montero got knocked around again,
as the Reno team defeated Las Vegas 51-16-10. It doesn't sound like it was a defensive battle there or a pitcher's duel. The 51s battled back from being down 9-0 at one point, with pitching staff allowing 15 hits, including 3 home runs. And as I said, Montero got hammered. He has allowed 12 earned runs in 7.2 innings over his last 2 starts. And for the year, the Pacific Coast League is batting .305 against him. And Richmond defeated Binghamton Mets 4-2, as B-Mets starter Tyler Pill allowed 4 runs in the 3rd inning, and that is all the Flying Squirrels would need to score, as the Binghamton offense went 1-for-6 with runners in scoring position, and Dominic Smith went 1-for-3, one of the highlights. Jace Boyd went 2-for-4 for Binghamton. Smith now has 40 RBI on the season, which is tied for the 5th most in the Eastern League. And St. Lucie defeated Tampa 2-1. The Mets have now won 6 of their last 7 games, as they have 1 more game left before the Florida State League All-Star break, which occurs this weekend. As we said earlier, Travis d'Arnaud went 2-for-3. Ahmed Rosario went 1-for-4. Wilmer Becerra went 0-for-4. John Morrow 2-for-4. And d'Arnaud caught all 9 innings behind the plate and could be headed, as we said, to Las Vegas. Corey Oswalt pitched 8 innings, gave up 2 hits, no earned runs, and he lowered his season whip to 1.34. But he's still struggling. The opponents are still hitting .275 against him in 64 innings. And the Columbia Fireflies beat Rome 4-3. The Fireflies allowed 3 runs in the top of the 8th inning to tie the game before getting the winning run home on a Jeffrey Deal RBI single in the bottom of the 8th. Vinny Sierra went 0-for-3 in that one. Another former Cyclone, David Thompson, went 0-for-3 in that one. But Jeff Deal had the big hit, and Columbia secured the victory despite only 4 hits and going 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position. Fireflies closer Alex Palsha has allowed 1 earned run over his last 7.2 innings and has 40 strikeouts in 29 innings. Another former Cyclone, and he was terrific last year with the Cyclones and is continuing the good work with the Columbia Fireflies. And before we go tonight, we've got a voicemail from Mike in Massachusetts. So, Mike, take it away.
Hi, Jerry. This is Mike from Northborough, Massachusetts, longtime listener and great fan of your program. I have a couple of things I wanted to ask you about. Number one, what do you feel, as the trade deadline comes up, would be wrong with bringing up Dilson Herrera? And now that they have so many options that could play third base, like Kelly Johnson, Wilmer, and even Neil Walker, they could get a good look at Herrera to see if he really has the stuff to be a major leaguer. I look at his box scores every day from Las Vegas. He's batting about .300. He's stealing bases. He's got a lot of power, and he seems to be just tremendous energy, like a young Jose Reyes was. Could be a spark plug in that leadoff position. And they could get Granderson out of there, because I just don't think he cuts it there. Number two, if Harvey has continued to straighten himself out in terms of his confidence, even if he's not getting the wins to show it, now with 3 good performances in a row, would it not be smart for the Mets to entertain trying to get someone like Nolan Arenado from Colorado in exchange for Matt? I know that he's probably going to have tremendous value in the winter, because I think the free agent market for pitchers is pretty thin. And I think that the likelihood of him sticking in a Mets uniform once free agency comes around with Boris slim. So I think we should try to get rid of him if we can get something really good in return. And Arenado is a keeper. So those are my comments. Just fantastic show, and I really look forward to it every week. So thanks again. Bye.
Well, thank you, Mike, for leaving that voicemail, and let me see. I can give you my opinion on a couple of things. The bringing up Adilson Herrera and actually both your questions is going to revolve around a lot what Wilma Flores does. The job is going to be Wilma Flores's. They're going to see if he can handle it on an everyday basis. And with the news today about David Wright getting the surgery, and it looks like it's going to be season-ending for him, it's going to give Flores an excellent shot to see if he can be an everyday player on a major league level and at third base. And what that does is then it does kind of clog it up for Herrera, because you're not going to move Walker to third or even Cabrera to third to play there and bring up Herrera. It just, the move doesn't seem to make sense right at this time. I know Herrera's having a good year, but keep in mind Walker's on a one-year deal, and whether they intend to sign him again, who knows? He's having a terrific season, and he's still pretty youngish. He's only 29 or 30, maybe 31. But Herrera, they're very high on, and I think he'll probably get a shot at the job next year. But he's still an unproven commodity at this level. So I think as far as the Herrera thing is, it all depends upon what happens with Flores. If Flores fails, then there's a chance they'll look for another option there. The second thing you asked about Harvey, moving a guy like Harvey is really better done in the winter. That's when you can make more of a blockbuster deal, which that would be. And again, bringing in a guy like Arenado is difficult because they want to give a shot at Flores, and the money issue could be part of it. If Flores is not receiving a whole lot of money, he's still young, and I don't know if he's up for arbitration yet, but no matter, it's his job, so I don't think they're going to try to make a move mid-season, especially to bring in that big of a player. That being said, again, we have a month and a half, or almost, a little over a month and a half, till the trading deadline. If they feel they need to make the move, there is a possibility. But usually when you move somebody like a Matt Harvey, it's usually done in the winter. And anyway, we want to keep him for the Mike Trout trade, don't we? Don't we want Mike Trout here? I can see us working a deal with the Angels to get Mike Trout in here, but that would have to be done in the wintertime. So. But thanks again for the call and the kind words, Mike, and keep listening. Well, that does it for this edition of the podcast. This edition is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. If you would like to help in keeping this podcast going, I urge you to check out our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/Mets Musings. So thanks for listening to this episode, and until next time, keep the faith, stay optimistic, and let's go Mets!